But we'll see if I get this car. If not, I'll get a fucking Chevy Silverado, roll coal on these liberals.
Okay.
I love to roll coal on liberals.
It's your, you never shut up about it.
Oh, God. I love to wake up in the morning, get 6 hours of sunlight, and then roll coal on some liberals.
Wait, what? You wake up in the morning, get 6 hours of sunlight?
Yeah. I roll coal on the liberals at about 2 p.m.
Okay. While they're at work.
Yeah, I go to the various, you know, buildings that liberals park at, like, you know, the shelter and the offices of your local college radio station. I just park my dually F-650 next to them. I just roll coal all over their cars. I've had to replace 6 engines in the last 2 years.
Today is a day that shall live in infamy, that shall be remembered for eons past. For on this day, this very day that you lived through, if you're listening to this, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads were down for 3 hours. And welcome back to Zero Credits, the show where we talk about things. My name is Henry.
And my name is Devastated by the Loss of Threads, John.
And together we're Henry and Devastated by the Loss of Threads, John, coming at you to discuss the cultural happenings of that third zeitgeist in order to make the world online.
I personally love an online world. I don't know how telling it is about the place that Facebook, Threads, and surprisingly Instagram play in my life. I did not notice this at all.
Me either. I was working during this time.
I mean, I usually look at a lot of Instagram while I'm working. When was this?
So I was first made aware of it in our friendly group chat. I was 9:36 a.m. was when I was first made aware that Facebook might be down, and then I quickly checked Elon Musk's X.com, and it was trending, and apparently it was down for some time after that, and the nation just watched in terror as all of our social media was down.
I'm surprised. Well, I guess it makes sense that it was this morning. I had a lot of stuff going on this morning. Otherwise, I really would have noticed that Instagram was down. The loss of Facebook and Threads really would have changed nothing about my life unless I wanted to get some of the most baby-brained takes that were already on X. So I would have missed Instagram, but it makes me feel a little sanctimonious and unplugged that I didn't miss anything.
I mean, I only knew because of the group chat. If the chat had said nothing, I would not have known. Because I don't know about you, but when I get on Facebook these days, as soon as I scroll past like 2 or 3 people I actually know, all I get are targeted ads from things I don't follow, from fan pages, from just everything that's not people I actually know. And so I stopped going to it because I don't need to hear from Venture Bros official call for submissions. Isn't it too peaceful? Like, Anime Central, two-tone before, during, and after? I don't know what that is. I need to hear from these people.
When I go on Facebook, I don't. But unfortunately, I wish that was the case. Living in a mid-sized metropolitan city, a lot of the comedy community moves through Facebook, and that's a shame. And I really wish they would move away from it. So I go on Facebook about once a month to see if they're like audition announcements or anything like that. And yeah, like I see two, I see two posts from people I know but don't follow on Instagram. So like I have no idea the trajectory of people's lives. Like right. someone who I haven't talked to in fucking 5 years is like making memes about being an exotic dancer, and then like someone else is being like looking for long-term employment, and then it's just posts that are from like, I'm gonna say they have like a scam aesthetic, like they have like a scam email aesthetic. Every single thing, a lot of it is like film content where it's just like a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio with like a million lines of text over it being like, did you know during Killing of the Flower Moon Leonardo DiCaprio saw a cloud?
It's wait, not he good. Did?
He yeah, saw he saw a cloud.
A cloud? Wow, that is news.
Yeah, it was, it had to be cut from the eventual movie because he ran into Marty's office and he was like, I saw a cloud. And he's like, I love it, kid. And then he realized that he just meant that he was replaying Final Fantasy VII on the set's PlayStation 1.
He saw, okay, cloud.
Yeah. And they clearly, they can't have that in the movie. It's ahistorical.
Yeah. No, they didn't have PlayStations back then.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. Oh, okay. Real quick aside. So we all went to go see Dune 2 together.
Oh, well, we did. Yeah.
Not together. We got tickets and then you guys got tickets and we had to sit apart. So like it was nice that you guys were there, but it didn't have like the seeing a movie together feeling. You know what I mean?
I mean, was it supposed to? Because you just posted what theater you were going to see it in. And without consulting you, we just bought tickets to the same showing.
Yeah, it's kind of like you are driving your car with your wife, and then two other people are like clutched to the bottom of the car going to the same place.
It's Cape Fear. We Cape Feared y'all.
Yeah, and oh, I really wish you guys didn't have those big fat stogies in the theater laughing and laughing. That's another Cape Fear.
Okay, thank you.
But we went to go see Dune 2, and I was, like, seated next to these two British men. And they seemed pretty cool. In fact, I was endeared to them immediately because they were showing off their little emulation handhelds, and they were like, oh, this is an Anbernic. And, like, they were nerding out about something I care about a lot. I'm like, these British men are okay. But they were definitely, like, younger than me, which hard to believe. And during the pre-roll, Alamo Drafthouse did a really cool thing where they did a recap of the plot of Dune, but they showed the three Dune movies like back to back, and each movie's like interpretation of events from the books. David Lynch's Dune, the Sci-Fi Network Dune, and then Denis Villeneuve's Dune. It was really cool. And then
it was, really helped. I love seeing the differences between each three for all of the major plot points that they were covering. And it helped to, well, it helped me really wrap my head around what had happened.
Yeah. It was such a cool idea. Cause it like gave you historical context for movies of Dune, and it gave you like textual context for the movie you were about to see. A+ Alamo Drafthouse.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. You can find it. It's 13 minutes long. I highly recommend you check it out. It's really cool.
It's very cool. And when they were showing it, one of the two British men was like, oh, is that the David Lynch Dune? I've never seen that. I won't do a British accent. But he said, hey, is that the David Lynch Dune? I've never seen that. And the other person said, Yeah, that one came out in like the 50s or 60s, which is... Let me just tell you, David Lynch's Dune came out in the 50s. What a groundbreaking film. America, hot off the heels of the Second World War. David Lynch's Technicolor nightmare, Dune, comes out.
We just weren't ready for it in the 50s.
It was just, it was very striking that, like, I'm sure at some point in my life when I was like 20, I didn't have a great frame of reference for things. And I was like, something like came out in the 80s. Like, no, I guess for that to be true, Oh no. It would probably be like a reference of like the 70s or the 60s or the 60s or the 50s for me, where like I can't really tell the two decades apart. And maybe I could like transpose something backwards in time. But assuming that like David Lynch's Dune came out in the 1950s is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Sorry for that.
I like your frame of reference. Right off the heels of World War II, David Lynch's Technicolor Nightmare, Dune.
Yeah, we just brought the boys back from overseas, and we rewarded them 5 to 14 years later with, of course, Dune. If you heard me make a weird noise there, it's because I almost keep hitting my microphone boom arm with a very large object I keep drinking from.
You want me to ask what you're drinking from? Dune 2 was great. Go see it. You wanted me to ask what you're drinking from?
Dune 2 was great. Maybe my one argument is that it kind of goes out of its way to inject some kind of modern cinema humor into it, but I feel like it's not badly placed. I feel like it adds some cool texture to the character of Stilgar. It takes some liberties with the text of the book, which I think is it's actually better for taking those liberties. So Dune 2, great. Highly recommended. It's fucking 3 hours long and totally worth it.
It was 3 hours long?
I think it's like 245. You know, the standard prestige movie length now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 246, you're right.
Nailed it. But since you're asking what I'm drinking, Henry.
John, what are you drinking out of?
So we went to one of our favorite places for after work when we've had to make too many decisions and don't want to cook dinner and want to spend too much money. We went to Austin Beer Works.
Nice.
Love Austin Beer Works. They have some very tasty food that has Impossible meat on it and a lot of tasty beers. And they had a beer on tap called Soft Ghosts, which is surprisingly hard to say. that they had tapped not 2 hours prior to our showing up. So you know I had to get a crowler, a big, fat, warm can full of this fresh beer.
So you're just drinking out of a huge can?
Just drinking out of a huge, huge can. And let me tell you, crowlers actually kind of bring back weird memories for me of COVID.
Oh yeah, going to a brewery that wasn't open, but they were desperately trying to get enough revenue to stay open, so they would just sell like drive-by crowlers.
Yeah, the crowlers are really like the order of the day during COVID. So if you went to a brewery you wanted to support and you got some food, you'd get a crowler or three, and yeah. They were typically sold at like a pretty steep discount. They're made to order. If someone doesn't know what a crowler is, it's a 32-ounce can that the lid and the can are separate, and there's like a pressing machine that fuses the two together, so they fill it up with whatever beer you want and then seal it for you. And I feel like in the kind of heyday of craft beer pre-COVID, growlers and crowlers are more of a thing. And then crowlers kind of only existed during COVID. And I don't know that I've gotten a crowler of anything since COVID. And then it brought back a lot of other weird memories of like buying food off the back of the Cisco truck that serviced my work. And like what it was like going to an HEB when there was a line to get into the HEB. I don't know. My brain went to I feel like there's like a year and a half period of my life that was very strange and regimented, but I just don't think about a lot.
I mean, yeah, we have collective trauma from our lifestyles are just without warning, changing so drastically, and then was just sort of the new normal for a year and a half or so. And now we're just pretending like, oh yeah, that never happened. Here, have price gouged groceries for no reason.
Yeah, have unnecessary corporate greed for no reason whatsoever. It's just so fresh, I guess, which is what was surprising to me, because I got a Crowler, and I was like, oh, isn't the shape of this thing is bring back some kind of memory for me, and do I need to sanitize my groceries?
Yeah.
Does it live in your hair? Like, it brought back like a lot of like real concerns I remember having, like a lot of very strange memories that I think I just try not to think about now.
Do I need to shave my beard because it lives in hair?
It was like, does it live on surfaces? Like, if we go out and we wait in the long Trader Joe's line, which, unpopular opinion, I know you're not a big Trader Joe's shopper. And good on you for not being a big Trader Joe's shopper. It's a racket. But the only time it was good to shop in Trader Joe's was during COVID, because they only let a limited amount of... Because if you go in Trader Joe's in Austin, Trader Joe's is like, in Austin specifically, is a perfect storm, because Trader Joe's is marketed towards like aesthetically minded or aesthetically obsessed younger people, but not that young. Who are willing to pay like a little bit more to have like a slightly curated experience. And like Trader Joe's in non-COVID times gives me a fucking panic attack in Austin. I hate going in Trader Joe's so much. I love their stuff. I love all the little fucking bullshit they have. That's more expensive and worse than HEB. But in COVID, it was calm, normal, like people could only go up and down lanes in one direction. It was great. I only shopped at Trader Joe's during COVID because it was like my little oasis.
I cannot relate.
They took it more seriously than HEB did, because I feel like HEB did lines for like a week, then they're like, get in here.
We just moved to curbside during the pandemic.
Yeah, that was a long time. It took us a long time to be okay with curbside and grocery delivery, and now it's all we do.
I know. We did it immediately, I'm pretty sure. Like, I think maybe JB did one like trip by herself, because I was like working or something. And I was like, nope. I'm not leaving this house for anything.
I absolutely cannot blame you. That is probably the right way to do it. I think, like, for some reason, just the nominal added expense of curbside or delivery, like, really, I was like, I'm not going to pay $4 extra. I'm going to risk getting COVID.
I'm going to risk my entire health.
I'm gonna risk dying on a ventilator because I don't want to pay $8 extra for what at the time was $120 worth of groceries, and now is like $190. What happened?
I don't know. Why is bread $10?
Oh, you're buying that cheap bread. But like I went to, and not to make this a whole thing, I hate for this to be like a COVID remembrance episode.
Yeah, stop it. Cut it out.
But I went to a hyper local wrestling promotion, and this hyper local wrestling promotion is pretty progressively minded, and a lot of people who like run it are members of the DSA, and they had this like big post about it being like, we have masks for everyone. If you show up and get a ticket, wear a mask. You should wear a mask to prevent vulnerable members of our community from getting sick. And also, like, I showed up and nobody was wearing a mask, so I didn't.
Oh, no.
But...
This was back in the day?
No, this was, like, 4 days ago.
Oh.
Yeah, this was, like, this was this week. But I read that, and it really brought out kind of a unfortunate, like, anti-masker shithead in me. where when they said like everyone should wear a mask to protect members of our community. The last time I'd gone to this, it was like outdoors in like a big outdoor space. And there was a part of me that was like, well, that's a little performative, isn't it? Like, I do believe the current science shows that you don't really need to wear a mask when you're outdoors. Yeah. So I kind of bristled at that and didn't want to go and felt like an anti-masker. Then someone told me it would be inside, and I was like, well, that totally makes sense. We should wear them. And then I got there, it was outside. I had this like whole roller coaster about it. You know, I truly have no idea how I feel.
I don't know what's happening.
In the world?
No. But are you saying you're so far removed from where we were? What was the point of your story?
Yeah, I guess I'm saying, like, I am so far removed from, like, that fearful place I was at during, like, the height of COVID, where someone's like, please wear a mask. I'm like, you performative fucking cuck.
Okay. I gotcha. I was about to say, because, like, we just flew twice to Orlando and back, and we didn't wear any masks in the airport or on the plane. We were fine.
Yeah, that was like the one time I didn't wear a mask on a plane. It felt really crazy. Planes still feel like the one place you should.
I mean, I feel that way. We even had them in my bag. We just didn't take them out to put them on.
You just knew the Disney magic would protect you.
I had COVID like after Thanksgiving, so I still feel super immune to it, so I'm fine. And Jamie's never had it.
Yeah, Jamie is, like, mega immune. Like, I feel like Jamie needs to get studied like Ellie in The Last of Us.
Hey, if you're saying I need to kill a bunch of people to make sure they don't kill my wife to examine her brain, don't threaten me with a good time.
Oh, my God, my man is Joel-pilled.
I feel like I would like shoot one person and immediately get taken out.
that would be a much, much worse ending.
I would not even shoot one person. I would shoot at one person and miss.
You would shoot at one person and you'd get shot 120 times.
Yeah. They'd be like, did you just shoot at us? Are you not going to let us like take her? I'd be like, get, hold still. And then
you'd shoot at the miss, and they'd be like, did you shoot us? Like, no. It was an accident. Like you'd bang.
My finger slipped.
And then you'd get shot anyway.
And they'd be like, why is your gun even out?
Not a good ending to your life, but I think it's more than any of us deserve.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'll mask up if I'm feeling bad.
Oh, for sure. Like if
I'm sick, even outdoor or indoor, I'll mask up. But yeah, I mean, it's over. You know, the next pandemic rolls around, I feel like that's the one that's going to wipe out humanity, because we're just going to be like, okay, we did this already. We don't have to do it again.
I feel like the only way we get around that is if the next pandemic isn't like spread through respiration. Like, I feel like if we get asked to do some new thing, we might do it. But if we get a mask up again, like nobody's doing it.
It would be really funny if this next pandemic is not airborne in any way, shape, or form, but masking up becomes popular, and it's like, it doesn't do anything for this one. Stop it.
It's bloodborne.
Oh, they're finally remaking it.
Yeah, everyone turns into Father Gascione.
The blood of the beast.
I want to be a big shaggy dog.
Yeah, you gotta drink that blood, boy.
Blood. They're remaking Bloodborne, but for some reason it's called Blood Boy. They apparently Miyazaki, that's what he actually wanted to call the game, and it was lost in translation. They heard Bloodborne.
That makes a lot of sense, because you know, there's a lot of blood boys in that game.
You know, it's crazy that the game makes you think it's about big shaggy dogs and then it's about something else entirely.
Yeah. Oh, they love doing that bait and switch, like an Elden Ring. It's all about the ring It's yeah. Elden. There's not like, a twist in Elden Ring. I don't know why I said this.
Man, I every time it's crazy in Elden Ring, they're like, it's all about this like one knight that's like right outside the and you think he's like the biggest, worst enemy, because you die 130 times to him, and then you like look it up, you're like, I didn't even need to fight the tree knight or whatever he's called.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the game is easy. Margit, right?
Yeah, Margo.
I really got to replay Elden Ring, but I am too deep in Jedi Survivor at the moment.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm deep in Spider-Man too, but we can't talk about video games.
We can't. And after Jedi Survivor, it's time to move on to that Final Fantasy VII Intergrade or whatever it's called. Rebirth.
Rebirth, yeah. Been hearing good things.
We'll see. I'm a bit of a cloud purist.
This dude only likes the pure clouds.
I like pure clouds. No cumulonimbus for me. Wait, are all clouds cumulonimbus?
No, there's got to be different types of clouds.
Cirrus?
I think that's one of them.
But is cumulonimbus just a cumulation of nimbus? We can't talk about the definitions of clouds on this podcast. It's too interesting.
Right. We only talk about uninteresting things.
Yeah. We don't want to arise the ire, arise the passions of our listeners. We need to keep them lulled into a sense of security.
That's right. We're part of the deep state initiative to make people lulled like sheep, so that we can keep harvesting their organs.
Yes, as the great Roman said, if not but for meat and honey, they will revolt, or whatever they said.
Yeah, meat and honey. You got it in one.
The two things the proletarian crave, meat and honey.
Meat and honey.
But instead we have to talk about boring things like Mr. Beast's content pivot.
I'm stunned into silence.
Of course, everybody knows that Mr. Beast is allegedly going through a big stylistic pivot right now.
Is he?
Yes. I don't know anything about Mr. Beast. Have never watched a video, but apparently in a recent X post, the YouTube star said, this past year, I've slowed down our videos, focused on storytelling, let scenes breathe, yelled less, more personality, longer videos, etc., and our views have skyrocketed. And from what I've been able to tell from looking at the analytics, that is demonstrably untrue. But it appears as though Mr. Beast is trying to make longer form videos, such as a video filmed in Kupari, Croatia, which is never acknowledged, aside from a few passing mentions of how the titular abandoned city was destroyed in, quote, the war, which one assumes he's referring to the Croatian War of Independence. The majority of the video is an ad for Mr. Beast's candy bar Feastables. And there's a sponsor segment in the middle for a flavored water brand.
What do you want me to say here?
I'm just saying Mr. Beast is moving to, I don't know. This is literally the only thing I could come up with trying to find news that's not about the thing that is today.
Right. I mean, so just a quick searching of Mr. Beast, I see numerous outlets claiming that maybe Disney bought his channel for $5 billion.
That doesn't seem correct.
Right. I sent you the thumbnail of the video you're describing, and I just want you to take a look because it is fucking ridiculous.
I survived 7 days in an abandoned city. That's not his body or his face or the city he's in.
Yeah.
But hey, longer form videos, 17 minutes long. Probably the longest video I've ever seen.
Face your biggest fear to win $8,000. That's not right. $800,000.
Let me tell you, that's not a very good bargain for facing my greatest fear.
Oh, never let me write a check for any amount of money. I have trouble reading the zeros. But that one's 22 minutes long, and it's got double the amount of views as his abandoned city video.
Yeah, seems like it's not paying off. I think this maybe speaks to a larger trend. If I were to maybe pull something out of the ether and not news aggregators, I think this is maybe due to Mr. Beast's upcoming Amazon Prime show, or his rumored Amazon Prime show. I think a lot of content creators that are like huge on YouTube have tried to slow down and branch out. I know Rhett and Link have been trying to like get a show going. Also, I don't watch these people's videos. I don't give a shit. I don't know. I barely know who Rhett and Link are. But apparently they've like been trying to start a show. I think this kind of speaks to like the general inability of like YouTube creators to transition to traditional media, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I think people have tried to do it before. Like, I think Game Grumps had, like, they tried to do a formatted show on, like, YouTube or something when YouTube was trying to do, like, YouTube TV and have original programming. I think they abandoned that. But it's hard to go from sort of being your own boss doing everything for your channel, or at least the bulk of everything, to pivoting to a studio format produced show where you've got tons of people who are your boss who have a lot of opinions about how to make your content. And it's like, that's not for me.
Yeah, I mean, rather than just like getting lucky, or in Mr. Beast's case, having like a preternatural sense for gaming the algorithm, making a TV show is like it's a real collaborative effort. It's a project.
Forever.
And I think a difficulty that a lot of content creators, not necessarily just on YouTube, but I mean, I'm the supporter of two, essentially, Patreons for two different, one's a podcast and one's like a gaming channel. And both of them like have had in the past or currently have a long-term stretch goal of like, we want to have an animated series, maybe on a streaming service. I'm like, oh, cool. You want to do something that's orders of magnitude harder than a live production on a streaming service? Do you realize how expensive modern animation is?
Yeah, I think I know one of the podcasts you're talking about, and I hear, like, you know, the not the spokesman, but like the head person on that podcast say, like, oh, could you imagine if this moment was like animated? And it's like, yeah, it would take more than a year to animate, and you would have to actually like nail down the writing, because you can't just ad-lib it, and then you would need people who weren't you to voice act.
Yeah, I mean, even no offense to you guys. Even these cases where like popular podcasts have like certain highlights or clips like set to animation on YouTube, that is a very talented amateur or professional animator animating that over the course of dozens upon dozens of hours. Like, it's so easy to put out a piece of live or semi-live edited content that's funny conceptually and think, wouldn't it be funny if there was animation for this? I'm like, you have no fucking idea how hard the thing you're saying is to do.
We can't all be Critical Role.
We can't all be Critical Role. And even if we were Critical Role is the result of a lot of paid and unpaid labor that costs a lot more than you think it does.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Critical Role's production values, I'm going to say, are like medium compared to the average like television show. If like on the low end you have like, I don't know, like a daytime court show, and on the high end you have Game of Thrones. It's like in the middle, and it's the most popular thing doing what it does, like almost without competition. It's very expensive to produce things, is all I'm saying. Stick really to your is. Little fucking videos.
There's no unions for podcasts. There's tons of unions and companies and contracts to navigate. It's just way more trouble than it's worth. Like if you got a good thing going with your podcast network and your Patreon and you're actually making money, ride that for as long as you can, because it's not going to last forever.
I mean, man, if I was putting out this podcast or something with a lot more effort, let's say 6 times more effort, and we were collectively pulling in 6 figures from a Patreon like some of these places are, ride that as long as you can. Like, sock it away, save as much as you can. You've reached the peak. And a lot right. of places have reached the peak, and they continue to have aspirations for like having a TV show. I'm like, it's so much more complicated than you think it is. But I don't know. Some of these people have like weird industry connections and some weird nepotism connections. So who knows what they're capable of?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm watching a clip of Mr. Beast throw a candy bar on the ground, and then 2 people in flame retardant gear came in and burned them with flamethrowers. And now he's at a... What is this video? He's now in a boardroom?
Oh, is that Feastables?
I don't know. I don't care. Why are we talking about... Why did you bring up Mr. Beast?
Because this is much less interesting than talking about clouds. We had to talk about Mr. Beast.
I am bored. And if I'm bored... Our fam is bored. Can we talk about what's going on today?
Good. Our fam has been fed the meat and honey, and they will not rebel today. Today, speaking of today, is a big day. Because...
Was I supposed to contribute?
Sometimes the throw is implied... we are talking today a long-term...
What day is it?
A long-term curse of this podcast is that we record on a cursed day, which is Tuesday. And Tuesday, right. historically, in every case, has been the day between news happening. We have a preternatural knack for predicting what will happen in the coming days before the episodes upload on Friday, and then something totally different happens, or someone we made passing mention to fucking dies.
That does happen more often than not.
Tuesday is a vortex. It's an inflection point. It's the event horizon between last week's news and this week's news. So it's really tough for us to catch the zeitgeist. It's like we're fishing... in a puddle. But today, of all days, we are recording on the biggest Tuesday of them all. That's right. Super Tuesday 2024.
What day is it?
What, Super Tuesday?
Oh, sorry. Was I late with the throw?
Yeah. No. We're on the Super Tuesday part now.
Okay, so John, tell me, walk me through it. What is Tuesday?
Tuesday is the second, or if you freaky, the third day of the week. By the way, are you a week starts on Sunday person or a week starts on Monday person?
I'm a Monday Munder.
Yeah, I work in the corporate world, so weeks start on Monday for me. But Super Tuesday is, I think, one of the biggest election days of the year. It's the biggest election primary where states choose how many delegates they're going to donate. I don't know the words. They're going to vote for the presidential nominees who can potentially win the delegates from that state when the race goes to the election and then the electoral college. Wow, I didn't think I'd have to explain Super Tuesday, but there's also races for the House, for Congress, for state DAs, for governors. Super Tuesday is a huge deal.
But it's all just the primaries for these states.
Yes.
So there's going to be a runoff.
I mean, is there necessarily a runoff after a primary election?
I'm not a runoff, but there's going to be a follow-up. The actual election will follow up.
Yeah. I mean, I think the presidential primary is today. But, like, for instance, if you're voting for a DA, I think you are actually voting for the DA, right?
I do not think that is true.
Fuck! You're just voting for candidates?
Mostly because here in the state of Texas, you only participate in your party's primary election. So you can only vote for which Democrats.
Oh, that's why they're split up that way.
Yeah, you're only voting for the nominees that you want to pick for your party to then run against the other party's nominees in the actual election. I don't think this Super Tuesday actually, it does have results, but they're not the results of who's going to run against the other guy.
Yeah.
On November, I'm not going to say a date, in November.
Yeah, someday in November, perhaps the 8th.
Could be. Wow. Anybody's guess.
With this Super Tuesday knowledge, I really wish you had been the one to explain what Super Tuesday was. I thought the primary part was just for the president. But shows what I know. All I know is in the Oscars.
I might be wrong, but
I'm pretty sure you're right. The Austin race, of course, obviously, if you live in Austin, you're a real head, which is a transit-minded mid-lefty. You, of course, follow the Austin Chronicle's Voter's Guide, which I largely agree with. And we picked up some pretty key wins.
That's good.
I don't know if Jose Garza has won in Texas, but I know Teresa Boisseau, U.S. District 10, walked away with like 70%. That's nice.
Of the Austin vote?
Just in general. It's like in the 10th district. I don't know, man. What do you want from me?
Why don't you introduce the segment we're in?
It's true. But for what it's worth, we decided we were doing this 30 minutes before we recorded. I opened 8 tabs and I'm piecing it together as I go along. And I think this officially
is the start.
Reigns in the 2024 zero credits highway to the Hell House. The comprehensive weekly breakdown of all the action leading up to the big day someday in November where we choose who will run this country for the next 4 days. That's right, at the beginning of the year.
For the next 4 days?
Wait, so I said 4 days.
You said for the next 4 days.
Okay, let me take that again. For the next 4 days.
Okay. You said days again, but I'm pretty sure you meant to.
For the next 4 years. That's right. At the beginning of the year, we teased that we would have an ongoing segment on the podcast going forward. And this year is unlike any other. We will have fully researched, totally confident reporting on the Zero Credits 2024 Highway to the Hell House, we will know who's running, we'll know who's voting.
We'll know who's running, we'll know who's voting.
We'll know who's running, who's voting, who gets the vote, and who gets that nasty snub.
The nasty snub? What?
That's right. Just like the Oscars, there aren't winners and losers. There are people who win and people who get snubbed.
They're getting snubbed.
That's right. So whoever doesn't win in these elections will be snubbed. And Super Tuesday, okay, to be serious, not only is Super Tuesday a great day to be doing this, Super Tuesday is also a great day to be very unfamiliar with the process and the candidates, because we're going to learn as we go. Every week, we are going to check in with every race, update you. We'll know more than we do today. I think that I did this in the 2020 and 2016 election just personally, and I get more invested both in local, state, and nationwide politics. I learned a lot. I devoted myself to it, and I'm going to do it again this year. Sure, I've forgotten everything I've known, but we're going to bring you along for the ride. There's also probably going to be a lot of Texas-specific stuff in there, so it probably won't mean much to you, but it means a lot to us, damn it.
That's right, John, and I'm here to confirm that approximately one-third of all delegates to the presidential nominating conventions can be won on Super Tuesday more than on any other day.
That's right. So it's a huge day. A third of the delegates, because you need a certain number to win, like 1,900 or something.
That can't be right.
It's a lot of delegates. Believe me, it's a lot.
You need a pocket. You need a vision, a dream, and a pocket full of delegates.
Yeah.
And this is a day to get some of them.
And it's you will win. And of course, we all know, barring some kind of major upset, the two candidates for president of the United States will be Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Doesn't really seem like there's any way out of that, but there's going to be a lot of fun state and local politics stuff in there too. Who's going to be governor of Texas? Who's it going to be?
There's no gubernatorial race this year, I don't think.
Fuck! Shit!
I think we did that like a year ago.
Who's gonna be?
Sorry, it was 2 years ago.
Who's gonna be? Who's gonna be Texas Supreme Court Place 2?
That might be up. I think the more important and exciting race in Texas is Ted Cruz's senator seat, because
yes.
The funny thing is, I think we've reported before, and he has said before, that he would not be running for re-election. And yet, here he is.
And yet, there he is.
Running for re-election. And it looks like he's leading the Republican primary vote right now. He has 88% of the Republican vote, and it looks like who he will be running against looks like is going to be Colin Allred at this moment in time of reporting. Of course, this was last updated at 8:29 p.m. on Tuesday. Who knows? As the votes are tallied, Roland Gutierrez might be able to pull ahead, but that would a lot of votes would need to swing his way.
It's true, though, for what it's worth, you kind of hate to see a split that's relatively that close for something like the U.S. Senate. Let's hope Ted Cruz is kicked out of there by Colin Allred, whose positions I need to do a little bit more research about.
I think he ran an ad on Hulu that I saw, and I forget what the point he made was, but after the ad, I remember saying, "Okay, he's got my vote."
Okay, so you know he's got your vote. Also, did you vote today?
No.
Did you vote early?
No.
Oh, hell yeah. Travis County District Attorney appears to handily go to Jose Garza, the progressive candidate.
That's great.
That's huge, actually. That's great. 50% reporting, though. We'll see how it goes. This was as of an hour ago.
Oh, you're right. 1,215 delegates are needed to win the Republican Party nomination. And 1,960.
Oh my God, I was amazingly close.
1,968 delegates are needed to win the Democratic Party nomination. Why are they different? We
great <don't>, question. Fantastic question. Fantastic question. We live in a very easily understood electoral system.
No, I mean, in an incumbent presidential election for the Democrats, this isn't really much of a big deal. Joe Biden is most likely, as the incumbent, going to be their candidate. So for Super Tuesday, this really isn't that big for Democrats. It's mostly big for the Republicans because there's a bit of a little bit of a contender in Nikki Haley, who was biting at the heels of Mr. Trump. She has won 43 delegates, so she just needs a couple 1,100 more, and then she might just win.
And I mean, we've seen it in past years. People pull delegates out of the strangest places.
Yeah, like Nevada.
I think Nikki Haley has shown up on SNL once or twice. And let me be perfectly honest with you. Wish I knew more about Nikki Haley. Wish I knew more about the current presidential election, to be 100% honest with you. I think that I slipped into a certain kind of malaise when I coalesced to the narrative about the Biden administration being ineffectual, which I think I'm slowly being convinced is not as ineffectual as I thought, and is maybe me believing that is maybe just a byproduct of the fact that, like, you can't get clicks or views by giving opinions that are, like, credulous and positive and not heterodox. So it becomes difficult to, like, learn about the good things the presidency has done.
I've been quietly trying to correct you every time you've said something about Biden not doing anything, because he's quietly being one of the most effective presidents we've ever had.
I would love if he was loudly one of the most effective presidents we've ever had.
The problem is, I honestly think the problem is the figurehead. The problem is Biden himself. He's just a quiet little boy eating his ice cream, and having that linked to dementia, and that makes headlines. And it's like, well, ice cream doesn't. Everyone gets caught up in, like, how does ice cream relate to dementia? What the fuck are we talking about? And meanwhile, it's like, here's sweeping legislation to, you know, student debt reform and things like that.
Yeah, I guess maybe my ties to dementia would be him saying that, like, Sisi, who's the president of Egypt, is the president of Mexico, and tying Mexico to the current situation in Gaza, which is not... that's maybe my ties to dementia. I would maybe argue that someone as old as Biden should never hold any kind of public office, but his administration actually seems to be doing some pretty fucking good work.
Right. I think more ties to dementia would be starting a sentence saying something like, and of course we just learned that Saudi Arabia and Russia will
I mean, if you don't understand what he's saying there, you're not reading between the lines. He's an old man.
Of course, I am quoting Mr. Trump when I say at a rally, he started a sentence saying, we've just learned that Saudi Arabia and Russia will, and then proceeded to just make noises.
It's really fucked. We should not have people this old running for public office.
I feel like the rest of the world has to laugh at us.
I mean, right? They actively are. I do wonder where that sentence went, because I feel like Trump would be a pretty big fan of both Saudi Arabia and Russia. Not for the reasons anyone could be, though I struggle to think of reasons why people could be a fan of either country.
Yeah.
But they're very wealthy countries run by giant fucking bullies, so it seems like Donald Trump would be big fans.
Yeah, you know, maybe Rika Badaga is just a 4D chess move I don't understand.
Of course, 4D chess, Cybertruck, etc.
Right. But we do have some Super Tuesday news, because it's coming out. I started this episode with a little bit of news that Facebook, Instagram, and Threads were down for a large portion of the day. But you know what happened before Meta went down, John? I think we may have seen some counterterrorism in action. Because we all know, John, this is true news, that Taylor Swift has been weaponizing her following to practice their democratic right to vote. We've seen it time and time again. She's tweeted it and other things. She had her boyfriend win the Super Bowl so that all eyes would be on them.
And we all know that three Vivas before Las Vegas means get your seventh booster.
Yeah, Travis Kelce giving everyone the ick was part of the psyop. And it just stands to reason. This is the timeline of events as I understand them. But this morning on Super Tuesday, Taylor Swift urged her 282 million Instagram followers to vote. And then Meta went down. Meta was trying to combat against Taylor Swift's weaponization of her followers.
Yeah, of course.
It's the only thing that stands to reason. Why else on Super Tuesday would the biggest social networks be down?
Yeah, I mean, Taylor Swift obviously Manchurian candidate style activated her 280 million followers. They were going to take to the platform and not only vote through Facebook and Instagram, which is an option. People don't know that, but young people can vote on Instagram and Facebook. And the system is rigged against Donald Trump. The votes, just they go right through. But they were going to try to convince other people to vote. And they were going to sign up to vote with their dead relatives' names. And Facebook had no option but to go down.
They had no... Look, today, Facebook protected democracy.
Hey, democracy dies in darkness.
That's what they say. And what did they do? They went dark.
They went dark to make democracy die.
Oh no, Taylor Swift crashed it herself so that democracy would die in darkness. You're hearing it all here first, folks.
Yeah, this is the kind of reporting you won't hear on your Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, because they don't even have a podcast.
They don't. They may.
They may. That's not verified or substantiated by any major claims.
I just have to say, big salute to the Meta Corporation for stopping terrorism. I personally have mailed a packet with all of my personal information to Cambridge Analytica to pay them back for their services. Remember that whole Cambridge Analytica scandal where they sold everyone's data?
I sent
them all my data to say thank you for your service. Thank you for protecting us from the American terrorist with three T's, Taylor Swift. And, you know, I just wish X had the courage of their convictions to stand up to her.
We are now getting some late breaking news. Sorry to interrupt your point, John. But it seems as though Ted Cruz has won the Texas Republican Senate primary. meaning that he will be running in November. And as of 8 p.m., it turns out Biden and Trump won Texas for their respective parties, so they will be on the ticket come November.
Damn, I was really hoping for a Marianne Williamson upset.
Yeah. And here I was pulling for Uncommitted.
Oh, God, it would be great if Uncommitted won.
Uncommitted got 2.2% of the votes so far, with 45%. I don't know what Uncommitted means, but on the Republican presidential primary, 2.2% are responding Uncommitted with 45% of the vote in. What? What are they doing?
Yeah, that's interesting. They're because all those people thought they were completing their field profiles.
They thought they were Uncommitted to their fields.
Yeah, they were completing their field profiles. They were trying to practice ethical non-monogamy, but turns out they were in the presidential primary, baby.
Ooh, yeah. So it looks like a lot of the, unsurprisingly, of course, I'm just looking at the Republican county by county results. It seems like there's a lot of Trump.
County. Fascinating. It's almost like if you drive 10 minutes outside of Austin, you see some really ghastly billboards and signs with psychopathic farmers who spell out Trump with hay bales or whatever.
Yeah,
it's almost like everyone who lives here is a fucking psychopath.
Now, if you're in the Biden campaign, you're looking at that 16% as of right now that Nikki Haley, 18%, my bad, that Nikki Haley managed to pull in for the primary. Are you thinking, if you're in the Biden administration, how do we appeal to that 18%?
Yeah, you have to be. I mean, that's the strongest. I mean, in the Biden administration, you always have to appeal to a never Trumper, even though never Trumpers are secretly yes Trumpers.
I hear you. All right. So what are the middle grounds between a Biden and a Haley? What beliefs and policies do they have in common?
I truly have no idea. I do want to say that Uncommitted is higher than Ron DeSantis. That's very of course, fun. It's very funny to me.
DeSantis did drop out of the race before this Super Tuesday, but it is funny that he could. I mean, one, it's funny he got 20,000 votes.
He got quite a few. I do notice that there's someone named Vivek on the primary. Yeah. And I just gotta say, I want to vote for a ghost who lives at the top of a pyramid.
Yeah, Vivek Ramaswamy.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant Vivek from Morrowind.
No, that would be Chris Christie.
Ah, yes, Chris Christie, famously Vivek from Morrowind. You know, if you have a black soul gem and you kill Chris Christie, you get his soul.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool. Can it fit in one gem, or do I need two?
You need to pay for two, just in case.
All of my tabs just minimized.
Great.
I said the magic phrase.
Chris Christie. Of course, on the can't. Star Locke. Who's Star Locke?
I don't know who that is. I do not know who that is.
I should learn more about Star Locke. But congratulations to the candidates, I guess.
I love how half of the candidates on both sides don't even have pictures. Like, the journalist covering this election couldn't even bring themselves to Google these people's names to put a picture.
I just think it'd be really funny to be like a guy named Starlock who from a brief Google looks like an 800-year-old cowboy.
Amazing.
And then just like 5,000 people or 4,000 people are just like, yeah, Starlock seems fine. Name seems cool.
Why not? Both by name alone, right?
Starlock is a libertarian.
Oh.
Also not surprising, given the name Starlock. I think we need to maybe go backwards in time a little bit for something we talked about last week to give a quick update that I think everyone is familiar with.
Okay, please. What are we talking about?
So we are talking about, of course, Donald Trump being on the primary ballot. And we all know that the Supreme Court ruled like a fucking day ago that states cannot remove candidates from a ballot for being insurrectionists, arguably. Right.
Yeah, the Supreme Court said, what did they say? What was their ruling?
Unanimous.
It was unanimous that the states don't have the right to kick off a presidential ballot?
So it was really interesting. I'm trying to find the split, but the split is surprisingly difficult to find. I think it was like 5-4 on breadth. But essentially, the judges unanimously agreed that Colorado, in this case, did not have grounds to exclude Trump from the ballot for his actions. Five of the justices, let me try to figure out who it was. So in dissent, there was no dissent because it was unanimous. But I think the four judges that offered a opinion contradictory to the majority opinion were, of course, Sotomayor, Ketanji Brown Jackson, a third typically liberal justice whose name I am forgetting, Stephen Breyer. I don't know. But amazingly, Amy Coney Barrett also wrote an opinion on the ruling, essentially saying, while four justices agree that the Colorado case does not have standing, the remaining five justices went on to say that rulings on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment should only be congressional, and states cannot decide on this particular section of the Constitution for some fucking reason. So essentially four justices were like, the Colorado thing's not okay. We should not rule any further. We should not set legal precedent any further than this. The remaining five justices said, in fact, only Congress can exclude people from the ballot for being insurrectionists. Which is surprising from Amy Coney Barrett, because the last time I checked in on Amy Coney Barrett, she was a Catholic psychopath a year ago. So it's refreshing, because Amy Coney Barrett was, of course, the justice that was jammed into the court after Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death. Right. So I thought Amy Coney Barrett would be much more like radical than she appears to be. She always votes right, and I don't agree with anything she's done. I'm surprised she comes out on that side of the opinion, though.
It's fascinating that this was their opinion, that it's up for Congress to decide, because it could be argued that Congress already did decide. It's called the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, by ratifying the 14th Amendment, which, once again, to just read quickly Section 3 from the 14th Amendment, quote, no person shall be senator or representative in Congress or elector of president or vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or any other state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as a member of the United States, or as an officer of the United States, or as a member of any state legislature, or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemy thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3, each house remove such disability. To me, maybe I'm too much of like a literalist, letter of the law person. Kind of seems like Colorado had a pretty open and fucking shut case.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they voted. They voted to remove him. They removed him. Seems open and shut to me.
Seems open and shut to me, and seems like there is actually a special, literally the last section of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is saying that Congress can choose to remove the disability of such insurrectionists so that they, I feel like that's the ruling, right? Is Colorado right. has a case, but Congress can choose to say it's okay. Like,
right.
I don't like to be, I like to be a spirit of the law guy, though that is a slippery slope. But if you believe in literalism, literally it's saying that Colorado had a great case and state courts can rule on constitutional matters. To say that this state court decision has to be done by Congress is pretty fucking ludicrous.
Yeah, I mean, that's overreaching. Like, that's... The states are supposed to govern themselves. The federal government takes care of the federal stuff. Why would the federal government weigh in on what one state is doing?
I would be interested, too. I haven't actually read the opinion. It's like 21 pages long, and who has the time? But I would be like actually interested to read the opinion to see where the unanimity came from.
Right.
Because I just like to know why Colorado didn't have a case. Because if you have a relatively progressive, not relatively, a progressive justice like Ketanji Brown Jackson saying that Colorado doesn't have a case, I'd just love to know where that comes from.
Yeah. What is the basis of that? Who knows? It's in 21 pages of decision. If you want to read it and get back to us, you can. I just want to point out that when it came to Roe v. Wade being overturned, it was the states can't decide for themselves, or it was the states have to decide for themselves.
Uh-huh.
And then now for this, taking Trump off the ballot, something the state decided for itself, suddenly it's no. The feds, Congress has to decide for the states. And so, like, how is it both ways? I get that they're completely different subject matter, but...
I mean, we've been living in a bullshit activist court system for the last 20 years where, like, it's really just dependent on either can we kick the can down the road to the point where we maintain the status quo, or how can we override a state's ability to decide for itself such that we maintain whatever our stated political objective is. Like, yeah. It's an activist court. It's been an activist court for the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years. So it's really just like whoever is in power will bend the interpretation in whatever way they need to satisfy their political ends.
Yep. Yep.
It would be a shame if this would persist for the rest of our lives.
It just might.
I mean, Amy Coney Barrett is very young.
Who is to say? Just know that every week we're going to update you with the latest and greatest information about the highway to the Hell House, Road 2024 election time.
That's right. The zero credits are Highway to the Hell House, Road to 2024 election time begins now. Mark your calendars. Every Friday, you are going to get the most up-to-date 3-day late coverage on the 2024 presidential race. State and local we're going to full politics this year, and I hope you're all fucking ready.
And I'll just leave you with this one headline. Texas GOP sounds alarm after voter roll purge hits Republicans on Super Tuesday.
Interesting. Very interesting. A lot of places in Texas had to call cops to remove fake cameras that were recording people while they were voting, seemingly set up by right-wing extremists.
Pretty cool. We'll keep you updated with that and more. But I think we've about covered everything that's going down tonight on Super Tuesday.
That's right. Super Tuesday. We came in less knowledgeable, more knowledgeable now. We're going to be locked in, ready to deliver value to the shareholders as time goes on. But for now, we both need to go and watch a couple episodes of Survivor.
Yeah, we're going to decompress with some Survivor.
Decompress with some Survivor.
Yeah. And don't be worried. We're going to cover the other normal stuff, too. This is just going to be one segment per episode. It's not going to take over the entire podcast.
No, it would be crazy to assume that if you unleash our obsessive personalities on politics, it's all we're going to talk about. It's like how I became very obsessed with a very specific thing in 2020, but it's fine. We're going to talk about the normal stuff, too. We're going to talk about video games. We're going to talk about who's Qui-Gon Jinn, and we're going to talk about what the Marvel Cinematic Universe do. And then we're going to talk about podcasts, all the normal stuff that you like.
Yep, those three things.
We're going to talk about who's Qui-Gon Jinn. Mostly, yeah. We're going to talk about who's Qui-Gon Jinn. But if you want to tell us who Qui-Gon Jinn is, you can do so in a variety of ways, which I set up like I was going to throw to you, Henry, but it's boomeranging right back at me. If you want to tell us who Qui-Gon Jinn is on Twitter / Elon Musk Cybertruck X, you can do so at ZCPCWHJ at Twitter/X.com. Oh, hold on. Do they still have Twitter.com? That'd be a great scoop if we bought Twitter.com. Wouldn't it be great if our email address was zerocredits@twitter.com? That would be fucking crazy. If you want to send us an email before we have zerocredits@... Wait, hold on. I didn't throw it to you. I'm all over the place. What's happening, Henry?
Super Tuesday.
Hey, Henry.
Yeah, John?
What does ZCPCWHJ on Twitter/X.com stand for?
Thank you for coming to me for this. With 45% of the polls being tallied, we are coming up with a result that ZCPCWHJ stands for Zany Cacophony of Playful, Creative, Whimsy, and Joy.
Wow, that's exactly what it stands for. Wait, E? Anyway, if you want to send us an email, you can send us one to zerocreditsisapodcast@gmail.com. We used to apologize for the email being broken, but that's the email forever now, because it turns out site hosting gouging is very real, and we got to explore alternatives. If you're listening to the podcast, congratulations, first of all. You've made it to the end and you can go on with living your life. Your debt is fulfilled and your curse is lifted. If you want to bestow the curse of listening to Zero Credits on anyone else, you can do so on a lot of different podcast platforms. Good Pods, Podchaser, Pod Damn America, and Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, which might be going away, or is called YouTube Music or YouTube Podcasts now. The space is fucked. But if you listen to us on any of those things, a great way for people to learn about the show is for you to leave some kind of rating or review or comment. Just engage with the place you get it from to boost it in the algorithm. Everyone has an algorithm. 1 + 1 = 2. You know this. We don't need to explain it to you. But the best way for people to learn about the podcast is for you to take those little street meats called your feet and beat pavement. That's right. Burn shoe leather. Get out there, get in your 1923 Plymouth Roadster and chase down various newsies, flappers, other people in the 1920s, and tell them to listen to the Zero Credits podcast, because word of the mouth is the only way we can survive.
And from everyone here at the Zero Credits Highway to the Hell House Reporting Center 2024 Studios, we just want to wish you a happy week.
Imagine a Chiron. Imagine a screen. Imagine correspondence, a desk, a floor. Shiny. The screen has a lot of fingerprints. It's broken. Imagine all these things. That's what we'll deliver to you. in 2024. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And you know what? I did my best.